she stated, it is 9:35, and this meeting of the BCDC Enforcement Committee is hereby called to order. My name is Marie Gilmore, and I am chair of this committee. And I'm just going to ask, since I'm a little bit away from the microphone, can everybody hear me? Is that a yes, yes, yes? Thumbs up? Okay, cool. All right. For commissioners, including those who are attending at Beale Street, please ensure that your video cameras are always on, and please mute yourselves when you are not speaking. Our first order of business today is to call the roll. Matthew, please call the roll. Commissioners, please unmute yourselves while he does this to respond, and then mute yourselves after responding.
Good morning. Let's see. We'll start with Commissioner Beelen.
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Vasquez?
Here.
And Chair Gilmore?
Here. Okay. We have a quorum present and are duly constituted to conduct business. And that's going to bring us to item 3 on our agenda, which is public comment. In accordance with our usual practice and as indicated on the agenda, we will now have general public comment on items that are not on today's agenda. We have received one general comment, and a copy has been linked to this agenda item on our website. For members of the public attending online, if you would like to speak either during the general public comment period or during the public comment period for an item on the agenda, please raise your hand in the Zoom application by clicking on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and look in the box where your name is listed under attendees. Find the small palm icon on the left. If you click on that palm icon, it will raise your hand, or if you are joining this meeting by phone, you must dial *9 to raise your hand and then dial *6 on your keypad to unmute your phone when the host asks you in order to make a comment. The meeting host will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order that they were raised. After you are called on, you will be unmuted so that you can share your comments. Please announce yourself first by first and last name for the record before making your comment. For members of the public attending in person, please queue up at the speaker's podium at your location and wait to be called upon to speak. Commenters are limited to 3 minutes to speak. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We are here to listen to any individual who requests to speak, but each speaker has the responsibility to act in a civil and courteous manner as determined by the chair. We will not tolerate hate speech, direct threats, indirect threats, or abusive language. We will mute anyone who fails to follow those guidelines. Margie, do we have any commentators? Do we have any comments, public comments?
No public comments, Chair Gilmore.
Okay, Commissioner Vasquez, do we have any members of the public at your location that wish to make general comments?
No, we don't.
Thank you. And let the record reflect that Commissioner Ranshaw has joined us. Welcome. Okay, so next item of business is item number 4, approval of the draft minutes for the last meeting. We have all been furnished draft minutes from our last meeting. Committee members, I would appreciate a motion and a second to approve these.
I so moved to approve.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to approve by Commissioner Beelen and a second by Commissioner Vasquez. And I want to note for the record that I have reviewed the minutes of the meeting, and I will be voting on this. We have a motion and a second, and if there are any objections to approving the minutes, please speak out now. Hearing no objections, the minutes are approved unanimously. I'm sorry? Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay, that brings us to item number 5, the enforcement report. And enforcement policy manager Matthew Trujillo will now provide the enforcement report. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, committee members. Only two items to report out today. In the first one being a case update, as per usual, since our last meeting on August 23rd. In the last month, we received 7 new cases and resolved 9 cases. And so that brings our total as of today to 79 unresolved cases, which is a net difference of -3 from last month. So small progress, but you know, just imagine what we can do with a fully staffed unit. Second, an update on the status of compliance with issued orders by the commission. This is in response to a request that we regularly update this committee on the compliance status of commission issued orders. So we did receive a complaint yesterday of new homeless encampments being established within Union Point Park, which, as you may recall, most of you, is under a compliance monitoring for commission order number CCD 2020.001.00. I went ahead and referred that complaint to the compliance team for follow-up, and you will see it today as a general public comment that was submitted for this meeting. And at a future meeting, we'll update you on the compliance or legal actions that we may take to get them back in compliance with their order. And that concludes my report. So I'm available for any follow-up questions you may have.
Thank you. Do any committee members have any questions for Matthew? Do we have any members of the public located in this room who have any questions for Matthew? John, do you have anybody at your location who has any public comments for Matthew?
No, and I don't have anyone from the public either.
You know. Oh, well, that's good to know. Thank you. All right. Yes. Please, go ahead. On this item?
Yes. Hi. I'm wondering why there's not been enforcement on the encampments in Union Park. There is one near the corner of Denison and Coast Guard Island along the shore near the abandoned vessels that are up on the rocks, the ones with the graffiti on them. There's an encampment that's been there for, I don't know, over a year, and it's gotten bigger. I've reported it several times and nothing has happened. I don't know what else I can do. That's what I had understood was my job as a resident of this marina, was to report when things were showing up, and I was promised that things would be handled, and that one has not been handled. I'm wondering why.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Jody Vries.
Hi, I'm actually here to present along with Ms. Simmons from the City of Oakland, but I'm in the whatever spectator box, so I wanted to make sure you guys knew I was here. That's why I have my hand raised.
Oh, thank you very much. I'll promote you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any more comments on item number 5 before we move on to item number 6, which is a briefing on the Oakland Alameda Estuary and encampment issue?
Seeing none.
Okay. Excuse me. Then we will move on to item number 6. This committee will now receive a briefing on actions taken to address abandoned and derelict vessels and anchor outs in the Oakland Alameda Estuary by the cities of Alameda and Oakland. At this time, will the representative or representative for the cities please identify themselves for the record, and we'll start with the City of Alameda.
Good morning. It's Sergeant Siebert with the City of Alameda Police Department.
Thank you and welcome. City of Oakland?
Good morning. It's Latanya Simmons, Assistant City Administrator and Functional Homelessness Administrator. Sorry about that, Joe.
No, sure. And Joe DeVries, Deputy City Administrator, and I'll be speaking about the nuisance vessels.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for attending, and welcome.
I do want to... My apologies, Chair Gilmore. I do want to also acknowledge Officer Albino is raised his hand and he's here to present as well.
Excellent. Okay, now I'm going to invite Compliance Analyst John Creech to give his introduction. John?
Morning. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm John Creech. I'm on your compliance team. I've been working closely with Adrian Klein, Principal Enforcement Analyst, to meet regularly with the cities of Oakland and Alameda. We recognize that this issue, the Oakland-Alameda estuary issue, is has received a lot of attention, and we are very excited about the progress that has been made. So first, I would like to have Sergeant Seibert go ahead and present.
Good morning. Thank you very much. As far as anchor outs on our side of the estuary in Alameda, we currently do not have any boats that are anchored out. We also currently do not have any encampments that are along the shoreline. I know our boat was out of service for about two and a half months just due to some maintenance issues and getting some basically backlog in parts to get the motors back up to stuff and running properly to get the boat back in the water. We were just back out on the water Sunday, September 24th, and just confirmed the no anchor outs and no encampments along our shoreline. During our current SAVE grant that we currently have. We have $100,000 that was granted to us for that. We have used that money and removed seven vessels from the water, both turn-ins as well as sunken vessels. And we also assisted the City of Oakland by removing five vessels that they had at the Aquatic Center. We applied for SAVE grants for the coming up cycle, and we have just gotten approval for $200,000 in the new SAVE grant cycle. And again, plan to help the City of Oakland with removing some of the vessels that they need help with. And I think that is it right now.
Sorry, we're having some technical difficulties. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, people are nodding their heads. This might be picking up.
Were you guys able to hear me?
Yes, online we could.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. Mr. DeVries, please.
Sure. Good morning. And actually, when we met with staff, we wanted to both cover shoreline encampments and anchor outs. And that's why our assistant city administrator is here. And we have a PowerPoint that Ms. Simmons has, and she's going to start out to talk about encampments. And then I'll talk about what's happening with the anchor outs. And then, of course, we have our Officer Albino here, who's the man on the ground or in the water, who can answer some of the operational questions. So if she can be given host access or ability to share screen, that'd be great.
Alice, I think you should be able to share If you click the share screen button at the bottom of your window.
Good morning. I wanted to make sure that I had the PowerPoint set for presentation, which is also tricky in this environment. Good morning, and thank you for allowing us to come and present some information in terms of the City of Oakland's activities in terms of encampment management. So my greetings to the honorable members of the BCDC. We'll move through this presentation, at which I will start a portion of it, and Mr. DeVries will engage another portion of it. And so we ask your patience, see that there's technical difficulties today, and I hope the technical gods are going to work with me. And so the presentation overall intends to address BCDC enforcement activities, and specifically those along the shorelines related to encampments and obviously nuisance vessels. Okay, that's all right. The overview of this presentation will cover the encampment management policy, specific encampment management operations, and then, of course, then move to the nuisance vessel policy and the nuisance vessel operations. Just to quickly level set on the conditions in terms of homelessness, we wanted to make sure that the committee understood, if you will, the level of homelessness that the City of Oakland is grappling with. According to the most recent point in time count of 2022, you see that there has been a substantial growth in homelessness, specifically unsheltered as well as sheltered homelessness. That modality breaks down across tents, cars, RVs, streets, and abandoned buildings, accordingly seeing that there's been a 31%, excuse me, there's been a 32% increase impact in our tent encampment, but there has been a 31% increase in our vehicular encampment in terms of cars and vans, and of course a 27% increase in terms of RVs. We believe, just to be very candid, that these are undercounted. I want to recognize that the 2022 point in time count was a makeup point in time count from the 2021 point in time count when it should have happened during the pandemic. We also see that there's been a slight reduction in street and outside encampment activity in terms of people lying, sleeping, and sitting directly on our streets. And there is a 1% difference with respect to abandoned buildings. So we also wanted to highlight that as it currently stands, the capacity of our shelter systems have a significant limitation in terms of the number of beds available. We cited that there's about 1,700 individuals that are that are homeless and sheltered. These numbers, in terms of the number of beds here, reflect, if you will, a combination of resources from Alameda County as well as those beds that the city has stood up itself. In terms of the city's inventory, it's probably just north of 1,200 beds that have been stood up. The encampment management policy, as you all well know, of course, has guided much of this work. However, there is a number of intersecting policies that have also had a significant impact on the operations. Of course, Martin B. Voisey stands at the top of the list, and that would be the component in terms of the Ninth Circuit Court District's decision that requires that there be an adequate offer of shelter for every encampment that is closed. And you can imagine just from the prior slides of seeing approximately 1,700 beds, seeing a number of individuals who are sheltered, and then seeing more than 3,000 individuals who are unsheltered, that this has posed a significant challenge for the city. In addition, the city has also weathered some litigation, which has also hyperextended some of the requirements to be able to close encampments, providing longer terms of constructive notice, extended terms in terms of the storage of personal belongings, and then some calculus as it relates to the conditions under which we can perform encampment closures associated with the weather. For instance, should we find that the weather reaches more than 1 inch of rain accumulated over an operation, we may be required to shut down. These new factors absolutely have impacted the city's ability to hypermobilize our response to encampments. Other policies that help us would be the emergency shelter ordinance that the city has adopted, and it expedites our ability to stand up interventions so that we can expand our shelter bed capacity. However, that is tethered to relevant state, local, and federal laws and resources. And to the extent that we have tapped all resources, we are capped at the numbers that we have. We are still pursuing additional resources to be able to expand our capacity. And of course, other operational policies as it relates to public works, OSHA requirements, their SOPs, other elements as it relates to DOT's enforcement authority, the police department's enforcement authority, all of those individuals will come together to be able to assist with the encampment management process. And I skipped over CDC guidance, but it really begins to elucidate, or rather demystify, the conditions associated with health and safety conditions. Should the CDC make a determination about communicable diseases, it could have an impact on our ability to close that encampment. Typically, the CDC will hold the position that you cannot disband an encampment if specific communicable diseases are within that encampment. And other elements that provide us information, of course, most recently mentioned was the 2022 point in time count that shows us the census overall of our encampment community and our unhoused community. Home Together, which is a strategy to end homelessness, proposals, if you will, and concepts centering equity and the design of homelessness systems. And of course, the Alameda County Continuum of Care and their policies that advance our ability with the resources that they provide. You all are very familiar with the encampment management policy. I know, of course, this commission has had a number of issues with respect to the encampments along the shorelines. The policy was adopted to assist all Oaklanders, of course, sheltered and unsheltered, to be able to manage the adverse impacts of encampments. And it intended to balance the interests of all residents in terms of the unhoused, housed businesses in the community, and even special districts and bodies such as yourself. The goal, of course, was to focus on mitigating the negative impacts in terms of health and safety. And this has continued to be the basis by which the EMT is exercising their authority to abate encampments. So I'll move a little bit more quickly. These two sensitivity areas just intend to give some detail in terms of the proximity and how the city set forth, if you will, an order of magnitude to focus on encampments and their removals. Those are in high sensitivity areas where health and safety impacts obviously would impact businesses, egress routes, emergency circumstances, rights of way. I would say that, of course, is where most of the BCDC, including other proximity elements, encampments are in terms of along the waterways. Low sensitivity areas would be like your underpasses and things like that, where, and perhaps some of your industrial areas where the encampments are not necessarily directly associated or more heavily associated with impacts to residences and businesses. The details of the sensitivity areas have been sort of laid out pretty clearly. I just wanted to highlight, obviously, that the most essential component as it relates to the BCDC, in addition to these other elements, would be those within 50 feet of a protected waterway as established by any governing body. In addition, of course, I just wanted to mention that the Public Works Department is also monitoring conditions in terms of activities that would be contaminants to waterways areas, and their barrier is about within 500 feet of protected waterways. Low sensitivity compliance also includes many of the things that are actually associated with high sensitivity conditions in terms of health and safety factors. But just quickly wanted to highlight that obviously the debris and the dumping of gray and black water as it affects our waterways and our storm drains, of course, is very essential to the conversation that we are having today. In terms of our operations, we wanted to show you that based on the intersecting policies that were described earlier, that there's a significant amount of work that goes into planning the closure of an encampment. First and foremost, it is most certainly about the assembly of the teams, but more so from intake to verification, verifying the conditions and assembling the teams proper to abate those specific conditions, but also the availability of those shelter beds. Currently, the city of Oakland obviously has less shelter beds available than we have unhoused on the streets. And I would say that the movement of individuals out of those shelter systems are a factor in terms of the vacancies there. Once we accumulate a number of beds, we are able to go out and close an encampment. And that has been challenging given the amount of homelessness that we see on the streets and the low number of shelter beds that we have. Just to give you a sample of what it is, just a snapshot of the number of requests that we receive. In 2021, when undertaking this work, we had approximately 2,400 requests. In year 2022, that number grew to about 3,500 requests, just south of it. And just counting through the end of June, we are already at above a reasonable high mark of the prior year, at about 2,100 requests. It's important to note that even this number is lower than what we can track. We had some issues with respect to the city of Oakland's ransomware incident. And as a result of that, many systems that we were using to track reports of encampments, of course, 311 was impacted and there was some data loss there. And so this number, probably in actuality, in terms of the number of complaints that have been filed, are probably close to about 2,700 in number. Just to give you a sense of the reported number of encampments, in 2022 at the adoption of the policy, it was projected that there was, you know, just north of 140 encampments, possibly about 150. That was the assumed number. However, by the time that we got to the end of 2021, the number of reported encampments had increased to 635. And by 2022, to 1,006. And of course, just to date, just to June 30th, we see the reported number of encampments escalated to be at 1,381. I just wanted to include that an encampment is counted from the body of one, and that is because the Martin B. Voisey requirements require that if I close an encampment of one person, I have to make a shelter offer, even if it is just simply one person. And so obviously, this count provides a very significant picture of the impact of homelessness here in the city of Oakland. And just to also underscore the high sensitivity and low sensitivity divide, you'll see that approximately 90% of our encampments are rated at high sensitivity in terms of their location. And just you know, I'd say about 11% are low sensitivity areas. The reason that we share this slide with you is because the intent of the encampment management policy at the time that it had contemplated the lower number of encampments to be at about 150, you know, these criteria pieces intended to allow for a prioritization specifically for waterways, construction areas, parks, specific areas in the rights of way and egress points and sidewalks. As you can see, based on the number of encampments and their sensitivity designations, the city is struggling to keep up with the amount of encampment, the growth of encampments, the abatement of encampments, and it is struggling to apply this prioritization given the large number of encampments that we are seeing. Just to be clear, since the 2021 implementation of this policy, the city has completed up through June 30th, 725 operations. Those operations consist of closures and deep cleanings. The deep cleanings intend to address circumstances where we cannot close. To date, however, I can tell you that that number is probably at approximately 825 operations. The city, as an example, in 2020, based on the pandemic conditions, could only execute approximately 64 operations. And so I just wanted to show you the intensity in which we're pursuing this work. In terms of that breakout across districts, we thought it would be helpful for you to see that our service requests, based on the demand, have been apportioned in terms of our response to be measured accordingly. A number of the districts in terms of D6 and D7 and D1 and D12 aren't quite seeing, if you will, the proportionate share of support based on the number of complaints that we have. And that is because the metrics of the encampment management policy are more prominently in terms of the spread of the health and safety conditions and the demand which is a metrics component, is providing for a large amount of service in the District 3 area. The city has met with our equity department, and we intend to adjust our service response to be able to more equitably support the departments, excuse me, the districts that have higher needs than the amount of service that we are providing. And so you will see a redistribution of our activities across the districts and certainly across the waterways, nearest to the waterways. There is a high rate of occurrence, reoccurrence, and that is because for every area that we clear, given the number of unhoused that we have on the streets, the remaining members in the community will often see a cleared area as a prime opportunity to re-encamp. Other factors also include that specific areas are much more difficult to maintain, such as our parks. Any area that's sprawling and large, and particularly attributed to open space, very difficult to keep clear. You can see Mosswood Park has had a large number of operations. I'll tell you, to date, we've probably been back there 14 times in terms of the number of operations. And there has to be some consideration given to better fortification of these specific areas. As you know, this also aligns with the interests associated with Union Point Park, where the recent re-encampment has come to our attention. We're directing resources to that location to be able to remove the individuals that are there. And again, we regularly respond very swiftly, typically with enforcement authority, to remove encampments when they show up at Union Point Park. We do not wish to allow those conditions to restore themselves based on where they were in March of 2021. The obvious outcomes and challenges to the work is the city certainly lacks sufficient shelter and housing for the unsheltered population, which is necessary to comply with the federal requirements of providing shelter before you close an encampment. And those low inventories of shelter have made this work very challenging for the encampment management team, and it has directly impacted our ability to have seamless and continuous and focused activity with respect to outreach to be able to perform the shelter offers and to close certainly more encampments, which is the goal of the encampment management policy. The other thing is that I just wanted to underscore that in addition to the low inventories of shelter and housing, you know, it is also not being matched in terms of the investments. That growth of our beds and our shelter is not growing at the same rate that our encampments. The reported number of encampments are increasing at this point. From the estimate of 150, we have increased by 9.2 times that value, reaching 1,381 as referenced in an earlier slide. The other issue that you all are also probably well aware of is that our encampments are seeing higher levels of criminal activity, which means that these conditions aren't just dangerous based on the general health and safety factors, but because drug dealing, violence, shootings, stolen cars, and chopped up vehicles are also being centered in our encampments as activities, as these criminal elements see that these are prime spaces to use to exploit the unhoused and to and they recognize that the city is challenged with closing encampments as fast as we would like to. And obviously, we talked about the recurrence patterns in terms of their increases, and I don't have to underscore that. And the obvious point is that, you know, encampment support in terms of resources has not been scaled to meet the increased number of homeless encampments. And of course, in terms of its demographics, Oakland's homelessness continues to be disproportionately African-American, and unhoused residents, those residents need additional supports to transition from encampments to shelter. And this is where I will hand it over to Joe, and you can go from
Thank
there.
You. Assistant City Administrator Simmons is a tough act to follow, but I'll give it my best shot. So on the vessel policy and background, I just wanted to kind of remind the enforcement community of where we are. You know, in 2020, the city halted the removal of vessels due to a claim after OPD destroyed an abandoned boat. And while I think a lot of us who knew the details of the case felt some displeasure at settling based on the mounting, you know, legal fees and the potential for liability, we not only settled that claim, we halted operations, which is what started to see some of that accumulation until we could rewrite the policy. In 2022, we did hire outside counsel that had expertise from the Sausalito Richardson Bay conditions to assist us, and because they felt that, no matter what internal policy OPD developed, we really needed authority at the local level through our municipal code. So they helped us in drafting the new ordinance to present to the city council. 22 was an election year, and so we introduced the ordinance in 2023. Even though we had rewritten the internal OPD policy, we really felt that we needed to bring a full ordinance to the council. Latonda, you can advance that. So at the end of 2022, we identified 25 vessels that were either abandoned or illegally anchored in the estuary. OPD did remove two vessels in late in 2022. They were halted in that operation due to damage to the marine unit. After outreach in early 2023, five boats did leave voluntarily, which brought the number down to 18. But again, we knew we needed the ordinance to fully roll out our abatement program, which is about to happen. Next slide, please. So the nuisance vessel ordinance was adopted in March on the 21st. It adds sections 8.7 to the municipal code. It provides further procedures for the abatement of abandoned vessels, whether people live on them or not. They're declared nuisance vessels. It establishes a distinct timeline, time limits in terms of how long someone can use the public docks or be in the estuary anchored. Where was I? There we go. The good news is we did apply for SAVE grant funding to implement the ordinance in the spring. OPD during the summer held internal training with our certified marine unit officers and conducted targeted enforcement, really to educate people to get them ready for what's coming. And go to the next slide. So currently we learned just last week, we've been awarded $166,000 in SAVE grant funding to remove vessels. We need to accept those funds, and we're trying to fast track that to the city council in October so that OPD can get down to business. First, OPD will start with the cleanup of abandoned boats. That'll commence in late October, early November. At the same time, noticing of illegal liveaboard vessels will occur in November. The goal is to have all of them noticed before Thanksgiving with the scheduled removal in December. And I know Officer Albino can fill in a lot of details, but we are seeking additional staffing to be dedicated to a 90-day operations plan. So we'll be reaching out to OPD leadership to see that they have that support. And I know that OPD is seeking and has been given an offer of assistance from Alameda PD and the U.S. Coast Guard. We really appreciate the partnership. I think that is that the last slide. Okay. Go ahead, Latonda. You want to do the next steps?
Well, yes. And thank you, Joe. Just wanted to underscore that there are also some next steps with respect to encampment activities. Amari Collins, who has served as the Deputy Homelessness Administrator, is currently this week actually performing a deep cleaning of Alameda Avenue, lifting debris. The goal would be to lift debris in anticipation of a deeper operation coming in October, which would be the full closure of that encampment. We had to do a substantial amount of work to try to work on mitigation strategies in advance of the closure. Similar to the comments that I made under prior slides, these are areas that are very difficult to keep clear because of its geographic kind of elements. In addition, we're continuing to support Union Point Park to prevent re-encampment by quickly taking down anything that we see that we are made aware of in terms of having been stood up after we cleared it. We're focused on some planning for Leet Drive, which is an area that is also deeply impacted by vehicular encampments. The city, and I just want to give Joe DeVries kudos here, having worked to set up another intervention specifically for parking support for RVs, that resource will be leveraged to be able to perform a closure at Leet and Baldwin Court. Baldwin is listed because they tend to go between the two locations. If we close Leet and they decline the services, they'll go to Baldwin. And then if we should take action at Baldwin Court, they'll come back to Leet. So the goal will be to address both locations. And also there's planning underway for Peralta Park, which is, you know, in, which is has a waterway element as well, but a significant impact based on the number of individuals who can encamp under the breezeway very close to those waterways, who we have sometimes had to tell to stop bathing in the water in terms of the unhoused when we close encampments there. We're going to also do the reworking of a geo-mapping that we had begun to prepare for encampments near the waterways and citywide. The city had undertook, in terms of the encampment management team, the use of the 311 system and City Works to be able to incorporate it as both a reporting medium, but also as a work management tool. The ransomware incident of February knocked out about 8 months of really hard work to build that as a workflow. And the city is now redoing that work. It is within City Works and also 311 that lend geo-mapping elements in terms of systems tools that we're and then, of course, we're going to continue our work, you know, despite the number of encampments that we are seeing in terms of reported encampments and the amount of work that it takes. I would say that the encampment management team, you know, remains committed to keeping the areas clean and clear. We're working to identify more resources specifically for outreach, because we know that the sooner that we can get people out there to start those conversations, even before the team can mobilize to get there, it becomes important in terms of moving people along. And there were more slides, but what we wanted to do was respect the committee's time, because there are conversations being had about the expansion of beds with the county and the state. There are meetings underway. Of course, those beds are essential to closing more encampments. I'm going to hand it back to you, John. Oh, just a slide to let you know who's in the homelessness division. And if there is a need to report encampments, the 311 systems are stood back up. Please use the 311 system to report encampments.
And really, just I don't have a whole lot more to add. I think we're, again, on the nuisance vessels, we are really poised to operationalize things, and we're excited about that. You know, and certainly, again, Officer Albino is doing the lion's share of the work out on the water and, you know, with his team. And happy to take any questions.
Thank you. This committee really wants to thank the representatives from the cities of Alameda and Oakland for these very informative briefings today. And right now, I'm going to ask if any members of the Enforcement Committee have questions for our guests. Because I sure do. Okay. Sanjay?
Yeah, I was encouraged to hear there is a grant that's been received and is going to be made available, it sounds like, in October, assuming the council approves. Can you not hear, Adrian? Okay. Is that better? Okay. I was encouraged to hear that there's a grant that's been received and should be made available, sounds like in the next month or so, assuming the council approves. Is there a likelihood of further grant or other funding being received in the near term, say during Q4 at some point?
As I understand it, we have the opportunity to apply for SAVE grant funding every year. And I think that in the past, I think Oakland has applied for funding based on our resources and our ability to execute. But we realized with the growth of the number of vessels that we needed to apply for more. So this is a larger amount that we applied for. And I imagine next spring, depending on how things go this winter, we would apply for more.
Was that it, Sanjay? Any other committee members? Okay, so to follow up on the SAVE grant, I believe you said it was $166,000. How many vessels do you think that that amount of money would cover in terms of renewal. Can you give a ballpark?
I will ask Officer Albino to speak on that, since he's the operations guy.
Yes, I do want to say a quick thank you to Latonda and Joe for your really in-depth perspective of this whole issue that we're tackling. But the $166,000 that I applied for were specifically for approximately 21 vessels. And it will depend on exactly what is on those vessels as far as engines, hazardous materials that are costly to dispose of. So it will be dependent upon the vessels, but I'm assuming that 95% of the vessels that are out there now will be removed from the estuary.
That's excellent news. And I'm assuming that none of those vessels that are out there are in the navigable waters, because other than if it were, then the Coast Guard would be involved. Is that correct?
There can be a technicality on what is a navigable waterway, but the majority of the waterways are clear for barges and cargo ships. But it is impacting recreational activities such as rowing, the rowing teams that we have out there, and the youth sailing teams as well.
Okay, well, that's good to know. The other question that I had, and it would be for both of the officers in terms of your police boats, because we've had a lot of complaints from people who live along the estuary of incidents that originate on the water, where people are coming down in boats and basically vandalizing or robbing the liveaboards and the marinas. And so my question to both of you is, how frequently do you patrol, and are any of those patrols during the evening or early morning hours?
I can answer for Oakland PD first. The approximate hours that we're actually on the water, so I'm the only full-time maritime officer.
Could you speak into the microphone a little bit closer, please?
Yeah. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. So me being the only full-time maritime officer, a lot of my job is administrative, of trying to gather funding for our boats, doing maintenance, doing trainings with other departments in the Coast Guard in the area. I'm able to get out on the water approximately 20 to 30 hours a week. And then I also adjust my schedule around to try and give the perception that we are out there during all hours of the day. So I have been doing night patrols. Today I'm doing an afternoon patrol. Yesterday was a morning patrol, and I'm trying to get eyes on during all hours of the day, not just 6 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Thank you. Alameda?
Yeah, for the city of Alameda, our marine unit is an ancillary duty for everybody involved. So we don't have any full-time officers on the marine unit. At this point in time, when we put our boat back in full-time service starting next month, we are being allowed 60 personnel hours per month. We staff our boat with a minimum of two persons at all times. So that will allow us to put, as of right now, will allow us to put our boat back in the water 3 days a month. And we do vary our patrols during the week, on the weekends, daytime, as well as nighttime. We'll stay out as late as about 2:45 in the morning.
Thank you. So I want to be really sensitive to the challenges that the city of Oakland is facing in terms of the homeless crisis and the homeless encampments and how that spills out into people thinking that boats are a method of housing. Clearly, the problem has vastly outstripped your current resources to deal with it. That being said, I understand the frustration of the people who actually live on the water, because it's impacting them and their daily lives, And there's this tendency, if something affects us, we are laser focused on it, whereas the city of Oakland has to focus on the entire city, not just the waterfront. But having said all of that, I'm wondering if there's any way that the cities of Oakland and Alameda can partner together in terms of sharing resources, obtaining more resources to put more patrols out on the water, especially during the evening hours where it seems like a lot of the vandalism and everything else tends to occur based on the reports and the complaints that we've heard. So I'm sort of tossing that out there. And then the other thing I wanted some clarification on was the city of Oakland mentioned that they were looking for more resources, both to help with the encampments and the homelessness issue. Is it possible to give us a brief synopsis of what kind of resources you're looking at and what the timeline might be for finding out whether or not you're successful?
Yeah. I can do a portion of that too. Latondo, are you going to speak to that?
I was, but I was going to ask, did you want us to take those questions in the way that you actually laid them out? And so I was going to let the officers speak first about collaboration in terms of between the jurisdictions for more enforcement, and then speak to the resources that we are seeking.
Yes, let's have the officers speak first, and then we'll talk about the more general homeless encampments. Thank you.
So in regards to patrols and increasing our footprint on the waterway, I've been training approximately 10 maritime officers who are dedicated to another assignment, but the marine unit is an auxiliary assignment for them. So I'm physically teaching them how to drive the boat, how to safely operate it on a waterway, how to approach an anchored out vessel safely. And what I'm hoping to do is have the boat available on a 24/7 basis based off of these officers spread out. Most of them are working patrol, so they're able to take a break from patrol, go down to the boats, do a short patrol of the estuary, and we're able to expand our footprint that way. We have already actually collaborated with the Alameda Police Department and the Coast Guard as well. The Alameda Police Department has graciously given us $30,000 in the last 6 months to help eradicate some of the anchored out vessels that have already been out there. And then the chief of Alameda Police, Chief Joshi, contacted me last week and offered part of their SAVE grant to help combat all the vessels that we have on our side of the estuary. So I'm grateful for that funding as well. And then I think Commander Shoup is also listening in from the Coast Guard. She has reached out and is, I think, just recently sent an email to collaborate with all law enforcement assets in the area to specifically handle these anchor out issues in a team effort approach to this. And then if Alameda Police, if you guys want to speak to this as well.
Yeah, I think you covered off on everything. We always try to partner with Albino as much as we can, as well as Sergeant Matthews with the San Francisco Marine Unit. We do training with them as well. And then, like Albino said, our chief offered some of our SAVE grant this coming cycle, as well as last cycle, to partner with them to remove some of their sunken and abandoned vessels within the waterways. And then, like I say, we are limited as far as personnel hours, and we are all ancillary as well on our marine unit. But anytime that there's an operation that needs to take place, we can always get our boat out there and team up with Oakland or the Coast Guard or San Francisco to get that job done.
Thank you. I'm very gratified to hear about the close cooperation between the law enforcement offices. I think that's the kind of thing that we want to see happen all across the board. And I also want to make a comment that I've read, and I understand this is no different in Alameda and Oakland, that it has been very difficult to hire police officers for a variety of different reasons, particularly since everybody everywhere is looking for police officers. So it's not just an issue of finding the money. It's also an issue of finding the personnel. But I want to once again commend you for your joint efforts. Thank you. Ms. Simmons?
Yes, and thank you. With respect to the city, we'll first start talking about the authorities and resources within our control. In the PowerPoint deck, I indicated that the encampment management team would be working with the units of Oakland Public Works, DOT, and OPD. With respect to Public Works, we are working with Public Works specifically and with their cleaning teams and their watershed division to examine the code authorities that would allow for the closure of encampments under emergency conditions, whereby we can see and catch people in the act of performing specific things that would provide notification to the appropriate teams, and they would be able to mobilize more swiftly to close those encampments. We see that as common in the areas of Alameda Avenue, Peralta is where I talked about, and other waterways where we know as soon as people set up, we would be able to use those emergency authorities, particularly based on the protected codes for waterways, to close those encampments more swiftly. That has also risen to the attention of the city administrator's office, to the extent that the city administrator is working with our team to plan a second team, an expansion of the team to be able to mobilize, given the number of the encampments that we have. The current team's capacity certainly limits their ability to respond as swiftly and to actually abate encampments more swiftly and to clean them more fastidiously. We are also meeting with Alameda County, who has come to the table recognizing that with Oakland having more than 50% of the encampments in the entire county, that there is a need to change the the proportionate share of resources. The goal would be for the counties to do not only provide additional health support and health services, but to avail additional resources that would mobilize outreach and the ability to close encampments. Just to be clear, I talked about us having a much more comprehensive presentation, but the Oakland population in terms of the unhoused, 46% have issues of mental health and or severe emotional issues. Another 41% have PTSD. Another 12% have a traumatic brain injury. And this means that when you are engaging the unhoused, you have to be prepared for de-escalation and really all of the tools for trauma-informed circumstances such as these. So those contributions from the county are going to be significant. Just to be clear, the county's declaration of a local emergency expands their ability to release more resources and to get support from federal agencies. And most recently, you may have heard that the county did issue that declaration of a local emergency last week. So we're anticipating hearing more from them in terms of the timeline and the strategy by which they will deploy resources. And we'll report back perhaps what that would look like. The other thing that the county has been able to do, and it's similar to what Oakland has done, obviously it takes more beds and more housing to be able to close encampments based on the federal requirements. The city earlier this year actually committed to a forward commitment of Measure U dollars to focus on the development of affordable housing units that would fall within the spectrum of the needs of the unhoused. Those units would be at about, 30% of the area median income and below, because the unhoused community typically is not, does not have high income streams, and it's most certainly is challenged in terms of affordability. Alameda County is also advancing a housing bond. The significance of Alameda County advancing a housing bond is that it would raise capital to be able to capitalize more projects, and that would be a contribution to City of Oakland projects. That means we would increase the amount of affordable housing development as a target. So we're excited about that as well. The city is also meeting directly with the governor's office. For those of you that are municipal and government sort of pundits and wonks, if you will, the loss of the redevelopment agency funding for cities across the state has been significant. The city of Oakland, and I had another job as the clerk, so I have a lot of detail here. The city of Oakland at the time that the redevelopment agencies were dissolved lost approximately $376 million as an annual allocation of redevelopment agency funds. We are now in year 11 of not having $376 million or what would be the calculus each year. That divestment has had a correlating impact to the ability to advance affordable housing development. And we also see that there's a correlation in the increase of homelessness since redevelopment agency dollars went away. And so that intends to anchor that the city of Oakland is working directly with the governor's office. We are not the only city to restore ongoing funding for housing as well as ongoing funding for homelessness. We're not going to be able to address these situations robustly with what we are using as competitive services. Yes, rather competitive sources. Yes, there's Home Key. Yes, there's HAP dollars, but those are competitive dollars. And so we don't get an ongoing stream. And some of those sources are being questioned in terms of their ability to continue for the next few years based on deficits that the state is facing. And so structurally, we have to address this in terms of funding. It has to be more a greater commitment from state and federal resources. And to that end, we're also looking at the federal all-in plan, which proposed a reduction in homelessness by 2025. What we see is the Secretary of Housing and is also issuing tranches of dollars. They are competitive, but it's more money than we've seen in a long time coming from federal government. We are seeking some direct allocations, recognizing that some of the prominent political figures in the White House come from the Bay Area. We hope to leverage our relationships there to figure out what we can do. And then I'll stop there.
Thank you very much. Speaking of the demise of redevelopment, it has certainly had, shall we say, many unintended consequences. So thank you very much. Cities of Alameda and Oakland for your presentations today. I thought it was very informative and very well done. And before I go to public comment, are there any members of the committee who have questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, we will now take public comments on this item. And I believe we have received one written public comment on this item. Margie, has anything else come in?
Chair Gilmore, correction, we received four public comment for item six.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, once again, if we have any online attendees, if you would like to provide comments at this time, you will need to raise your hand by clicking on the Participants tab in Zoom or by phone by dialing *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute yourself. Margie will then announce you and invite you to comment. Comments are limited to 3 minutes, and Margie will be keeping track of time. And this is a request for comments only on this item. And the chair's prerogative, we're going to start with people who are in the room.
Yes. Go ahead and make a form a line. Each of you will have 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Brock DeLapp. A decade ago, in 2013, there was a near $8 million multi-agency cleanup of all illegal anchor outs on the Oakland estuary. the BCDC was an important partner in this project. When it was over, all of the participating agencies that provided funding said that it wouldn't be repeated. If the estuary was to remain clean, it would be dependent upon diligent monitoring and enforcement. This did not occur. The consequences of this failure are clear to see. The Oakland shoreline of the estuary is littered with sunken wrecks and derelict end-of-life vessels. Crime has risen to truly intolerable levels. Multiple vessels have been stolen and ransacked. Victims have had to resort to personally confronting the criminals to recover their property without the benefit of police support. Is this an appropriate activity for a 79-year-old senior? The Oakland estuary is populated by marinas with over 3,000 slips. All of these boat owners pay annual property taxes to Alameda County. The shoreline also has several new multi-million, and in one case, multi-billion dollar residential developments. One can only imagine the tax revenue that these produce. And yet, what law enforcement services are provided to the estuary? The Alameda County Sheriff's Department has disbanded the county's Marine Patrol Unit. The Oakland Police Department has only one dedicated Marine Patrol officer. The Port of Oakland, at the mouth of the estuary, is the fourth largest port on the West Coast. Is it reasonable that there is only one law enforcement officer to provide on-the-water protection for this critical regional resource? It is unfortunate that it has required international press coverage to generate a focus on this problem. I have asked BCDC if there is any other issue that currently poses a greater threat to San Francisco Bay than what is occurring in the estuary. I was told no. This is the top problem that BCD faces. So my final question is, given that the current conditions did not occur overnight, but rather have grown over many years, is the BCDC doing all that it can to protect this precious resource on San Francisco Bay? And my concern is if we have another repeat cleanup, which I am very optimistically hopeful that will occur, if there is no follow-up with ongoing enforcement, we'll repeat this cycle endlessly. And I would also emphasize that housing unhoused people in derelict end-of-life vessels is a threat to them, it's a threat to the environment, and it's a threat to the general public, and it should not be allowed. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Cammy Richards. I'm with the Alameda Community Sailing Center, and I have a couple of points. And I guess one of the things that I learned today is that a homeless encampment is apparently defined as just one person sleeping in a sleeping bag. That seems like a bad use of the term encampment, and we were on a delightful late afternoon sail in the Oakland estuary yesterday on a little 20-foot sailboat, and we sailed by Estuary Park, Jack London Square, where JLAC is, and I can't imagine what would be required to remove all those people. If one person is there, it's a homeless encampment. Our business, Pineapple Sales, used to be at 123 2nd Street in Oakland. We would go down there for lunch in the shade of beautiful sycamore trees, nice park, clean tables. I can't imagine taking my granddaughter there. The whole place is just infested. And I have great sadness for people who don't have housing, but I have zero respect for people who just make a complete mess of things. Okay, Alameda Community Sailing Center is a organization for teaching young kids how to sail. We have a group of 8 safety boats, which are required. We have 1 safety boat for every 6 sailboats that are on the water. So if we don't have enough safety boats, we can't put enough kids on the water. In one night, we had 4 of those boats stolen out of the water over at Ballina Isle, and that's half of our fleet. We basically had an all-hands-on-deck call to go and retrieve this stuff. It took 36 hours to get a police report number from the Alameda Police Department. We called them right after the thing. They said, well, wait, we'll send an officer. Well, okay, it's dinner time, still no officer. Well, maybe later tonight. It was lunchtime the next day to get a report filed. And the police said, you know, we really can't help you. Our best advice is if you find your boats, don't approach the perpetrators. The boats cost $25,000 to $35,000 a piece. They are rigid fiberglass hulls with a tube around the outside so you can go up and connect to the little kids and talk to them face to face. And we cannot imagine a way where we can just be handing off $35,000 boats to thieves and doing nothing about it. We called the Oakland police. Oakland police said, well, if the boats were stolen from Alameda, it's the Alameda problem. The Alameda police say, well, if the boat is in Oakland, we were at Union Point looking at our boats tied up to derelict boats 50 yards off the beach. And the Oakland police say, well, that's the Oakland problem because you're in Oakland. The Coast Guard is 200 yards away, Coast Guard Island, not their problem either. So it becomes our problem. And we eventually just simply got out in other motorboats, went around, and we collected all 4 of our stolen boats. And we collected them by confronting the people who said, well, that is my boat because I found it adrift. Well, yeah, of course you did. We collected a boat that belonged to, am I over? I'm sorry.
Yeah, your time is up.
That's good enough. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next. Sir, could you identify yourself, please?
Sorry, my name is Cammy Richards, Alameda Community Sailing Center.
Thank you.
Yep.
Please state your name for the record.
Good morning. My name is Stephen Orris. I'm harbor master over at Marina Bay Yacht Harbor in Richmond.
My name is Stephen Orris. I'm harbor master at Marina Bay Yacht Harbor in Richmond. So I've been following this situation with, great concern. And I would like to emphasize that I think it would be critical as the commission works with their partners on solutions that they consider this on a region-wide basis. And it's not just an estuary problem, just as it was not just a Richardson Bay problem, that we don't want a situation where, you know, we just move it from one part of the bay to the other and so forth. And then on industry-wide, that keep in mind that this has the potential to become a growing issue as boats get older. There could be one or two economic downturns away to be a flood of abandoned derelict boats. So the solution becomes a greater issue of working with state and other partners in order to find appropriate disposal aspects for end of life vessels. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Margie, do we have any other public commenters?
We have about 4 public comments online.
Okay.
First up, we have Tracy Riegelman.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Tracy Riegelman. I am a resident of Alameda, specifically Marina Village. I work in Marina Village, and I am the rear commodore at Oakland Yacht Club. Before I get into my comments, I would like to thank Officer Albino, Officer Siebert, and Ms. Simons for their work and efforts in a very challenging and difficult situation. It's appreciated to hear the efforts that you're putting in. I would like to clarify some comments that I heard at the start of the meeting. The issue of the anchor outs in the boats is a very, very large part of this issue. It's probably about 50% of the problem. The encampments are a large part of the problem as well. However, there is also some work going on through the County of Alameda to provide support for unhoused individuals in facilities that are not permitted for that use and that are not up to current building codes and compliance. And those people in the situation that they're in right now are at risk of losing their lives, and they are creating problems with the public. So the fears are not just the liveaboards. The fears are the residents, businesses, users of the Bay Trail, and the residents of Eddie's Place, which people are put there to try to help. There are encampments in Alameda. If you drive along Main Street and look along Main Street, there's encampments along there. There's encampments in the Main Street Street Ferry Terminal. And there are also encampments in front of the Alameda Community Sailing Center at the Encinal Harbor. All of this needs to be addressed and looked at. And it is unfathomable to me that the lack of maintenance and the destruction of the shoreside facilities and infrastructure would be left to the point where a lawless and Wild West environment could occur. People are at risk of hurting themselves. People are at risk of confrontation. The police departments are unstaffed, but we need more help and more support. The overall Oakland and Alameda estuary is ignored. And that ignorance is creating a hazard to the public. And I do appreciate the efforts, the limited efforts of APD and OPD. It needs to be more. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we have Annan. Annan, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
I'm sorry. I would like to testify anonymously because I live here at Union Point, and the anchor outs know who I am. They know my name. They know my car. I have fear of retaliation. Can I do that?
Yes.
Okay. So I really appreciate the presentations by Ms. Simmons and Mr. DeVries today. We all understand that the problem is enormous. I also say I live here on the estuary. I also row in the estuary daily. And I got to say, I see the Alameda Marine Patrol unit out here often. I see it several times a week, but I never see the OPD, ever see the Oakland Police Marine Patrol unit, ever. I have personally given up calling the Oakland Police about harassment and fights on the water and incursions into the marina. I have filed at least 24 reports and never had anything be done. If they come out here, they say, well, it's out on the water. There's nothing we can do. I live with generators going at all hours of the day, the night. I live with a raw sewage floating past my vessel several times a month. I have called around and tried to report the raw sewage. I remember one time I called the Coast Guard, reported the raw sewage. I called the Oakland Police Department. They told me to call the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard gave me two numbers. One of them, I left a message and never heard back. And the other one said, thank you very much for reporting this. We're going to call the Coast Guard. I want to tell you about an instance when late at night in the pitch black, I hear faint calls coming from the estuary of somebody yelling, you know, help me, please, please, anybody help me. And I go out there in my kayak with a headlamp, and there's a sailboat drifting down the estuary. And with my kayak, I towed it to shore. There was a panicked and terrified young man on that boat who told me that he'd had a horrible fight and been yelled at and abused by one of the other anchor outs who then cut his line. If there had been any wind at the time, I wouldn't have been able to go out there and rescue this young man who had no motor and no ability to sail that boat. I have at least a dozen times had boats pull their anchors and crash into me during storms. Winter is coming again. Last winter resulted in so many sunken and stranded vessels, each one of which is an enormous cost and does enormous environmental damage. People's lives are at risk who are living out there on the boats in these winter storms. I beg the city of Oakland to handle this completely before the winter storms return.
Thank you very much. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Next, we have Deborah Lunn. Deborah, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Lunn. I'm the property director here at Alta Star Harbor, which is a new complex that opened up, an adaptive reuse of the old Del Monte Canyon.
Did we lose her? Deborah?
I'm sorry, can you hear me now? There you are. Sorry. Yes. Sorry. My name is Deborah Lunn. I'm the property director here at Alta Star Harbor, which is the old Del Monte Canning Warehouse. And I just wanted to state that the issues are not just on the water, but now they're on land. And they're impacting the businesses up and down the estuary. We opened our doors here on December 19th of 2022. With our first move-ins. And as of starting August 6th, we have had stolen 3 trucks, 3 cars, 1 U-Haul, and 4 bicycles within our facility. So one of these trucks actually was found at a chop house in the High Street encampment area in Oakland. So I just want to say a lot of our residents move here from Oakland and from San Francisco because of safety issues. They think, you know, it's quiet here, it's safe here, and we want them to keep feeling that way. And we don't want to be able, you know, we obviously pay a lot of tax dollars and just want our residents to feel safe here. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Next, we have Brad Gross. Brad?
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry. I was looking for the unmute button. This is Brad Gross, Executive Director of Richard Bay Regional Agency. And I want to commend everybody for their presentations today and their comments. And what I have to say is basically, I guess it would be a stream of consciousness based on what I've heard and what I've heard from it, especially from Mr. DeLapp. I wanted to thank him for putting this out into the public and actually into the industry so that we can address these issues. And as the presentations indicate, it seems that all areas in the Oakland and Alameda area seem to be suffering from the same homeless problems, whether it be landside or waterside. And I want to encourage everybody that they treat their illegal liveaboards the same as they're planning to treat these landside encampments. I heard comment about the SAVE grant, but I don't believe that the SAVE grant is the panacea that you believe it may be, because I haven't heard anything as far as housing programs working side by side with addressing these illegal anchor outs. The grant program is wonderful for removing abandoned vessels and debris you may find on the shoreside, but you still have people illegally living and anchoring on their vessels in the estuary. I'm also concerned that the 90-day enforcement and abatement program that was discussed will simply shift the Oakland Alameda problems to other jurisdictions, specifically Richardson Bay. Finally, I do want to offer to those who are working on a vessel and debris abatement, if RBRA can be of any assistance, where they believe we may be helpful, we're always willing to lend what we have learned over the years with programs like this. And with that, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brad. Next, we have Mary Spicer. Mary?
Yeah, hi. You might want to reset the clock, I think. Anyways, look, Ms. Simmons and our Marine Patrol, I really want to say thank you. My name's Mary Spicer. I am the one of the founders of I Heart Oakland Alameda Estuary. We've been cleaning the Oakland Alameda Estuary since 2017. We started on kayaks and stand-up paddle boards going to the shorelines that are deeply impacted by extreme garbage and getting that garbage via partnerships with California Canoe and Kayak and East Bay Row Club. We're a large community. We have participants from both sides of Oakland and Alameda, and people really come out to clean and really care about the estuary. Last year at Cal Coastal, we in 2.5 hours cleared 3,000 pounds of garbage in 2.5 hours with our community. And that is only a fraction of the amount of garbage that's along the estuary. We also cleaned Jekyll London Aquatic Center and Estuary Park, and unfortunately canceled the cleanup this year because of safety concerns at one of the unhoused community, one of the encampment sites at JLAC. There's been some violent incidences in there, and unfortunately, I don't feel comfortable bringing children to the site until those are addressed by the City of Oakland. I'm currently talking to people about that via the city, so that's good. I'm asking for holistic solutions because besides just the crime and the sunk boats and the unhoused issues, which usually during our cleanups, the unhoused join our cleanups. We really want to open up our space for that. But our shorelines are paying the price via the storms last February. A lot of the boats, the boats got smashed into the shorelines. And then all of that debris literally ends up on the shore. And I feel like everyone's so busy worrying about the sunk boats and the crime. Nobody's really even paying attention to the amount of garbage and marine debris on the shores of the Oakland Estuary. I've been working with some people at the port, some people at the city to find out who do I call if I can't go and clean some of the shorelines? Who do I call to actually get the shoreline garbage enforced? I really would love to have an answer for that. And then there is the NOAA Marine Debris Grants just recently released. They're huge. I took the Cal representative for NOAA out, and she said that she thinks Oakland is a great candidate for some of these huge million-dollar grants. So I really hope that that the city might consider going for those.
Thank you, Mary. That's all we have, Chair Gilmore.
Thank you. Do any other committee members have any comments? Anybody? Commissioner Ranchot?
I just want to thank the members of the public who came here today and who also took their time to submit public comments via Zoom. We appreciate you sharing your experiences, which are concerning and disturbing, and clearly continue to reflect, to me at least, an unacceptable situation that needs additional resources from local governments. And so to the extent that our committee can support any of those efforts, I think we are ready to and appreciate suggestions for how we can do more within our jurisdiction.
Chair Gilmore, we have George Uvies would like to speak. Okay, very quickly, please.
Thank you, Chair Gilmore. I just wanted to lift up the comments of that last public speaker and ask that she reach out to me directly via email about that grant opportunity, because our sustainability team could look at it. That team oversees our climate change, our climate mitigation work, and we have some great grant writers. And so I would love to have that. And I just want to thank her for noting the importance of a holistic approach I am meeting with a club that's looking at potentially using our old Cryer building site to try to create some positive activity there, which would dissuade negative activity. And I do think that that's part of this process. It's not just an enforcement opportunity, but the more positive energy and activities we bring to the shoreline, the more we can push out that negative work. So I'd like to pursue that from that last speaker.
Thank you. Any other commissioners? I thought I saw a hand up online. Maybe that was just Joe. I definitely want to heartily concur with Commissioner Ranshaw's comments and sentiments. And I do have a quick question for staff. We've had complaints and incidences about sewage and other undesirable things being put into the bay. Is that an issue for the water board? Who should people be calling when they see something like that? Do we know?
Yes, the water board does have jurisdiction for that. I forget where in our law or policy or regulations that's specified, but it is specified in our documents, and I can follow up with you with the specific citation. We should, of course, be aware of any reports that they make, so they should continue to submit reports to us, but definitely loop in the water board when it comes to water quality issues.
Okay, is there a way to, I don't know, publicize either an email or a phone number, some sort of contact information where members of the public, if they see something, they can say something to the relevant authority? I mean, it's great that they contact us and, you know, we pass it on, but, you know, I think it would be just as effective, if not more effective, if they could contact the water board, whoever's responsible for this, directly. So maybe that's something that we need to look into.
Yeah, we can look into maybe putting, if it's not already there, links on the website. We certainly do make those recommendations to reporters when they call in. I take a look at every report, and if it maybe implicates another jurisdiction, overlapping jurisdiction, or maybe is better suited towards, say, the locals, Oakland PD or water board, I will certainly mention that to the reporter, and as well as make a report myself oftentimes. We can look at doing a better job.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. And if there are no other comments from members of the committee or the public, I'm going to conclude this item. And so now, committee members, I will entertain a motion and a second to adjourn our meeting.
I move to adjourn that meeting.
Second.
Oh, wow. did I see a hand from a staff member? Adrian, are you nodding your head yes before we adjourn? Okay. So we have a motion by Commissioner Bellin and a second by Commissioner Ranshaw, but before we vote on it, Ms. Klein has a comment.
Well, I just wanted to forecast what staff had planned for next steps, which was to come back to you at your first December meeting, which would be the 14th, I believe that's a Thursday, assuming that we can obtain a quorum to hear an update from the city, status of the effort on the water, and also to the city's both address it today, but plans for long-term management and prevention going forward as the cities are able to resolve these issues. So just wanted to conclude with that parting comment. Thank you. And apologies to delay the conclusion of the meeting.
No, thank you. I actually should have asked when our next update was going to be. So thank you for providing that information. Okay. So we have a motion and a second on the floor to adjourn. Do I hear any objections to that? Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned at 11:08. Thank you, everybody, presenters and guests, And thank you very much for attending today.